the network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Week, episode 72, recorded Friday, January 4th, 2012. Like bunnies.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
Week.
Online.
This is AV Week.
It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of audiovisual news and information. My name is Tim Albright. I'm your host. Thank you so very much for joining us. With us this week is Mr. Todd Puma. He is the CEO of Source Home Theater. Welcome, sir.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Mr. Chris Netto is a consultant with AV Help Desk. How are you, brother?
I'm doing good, my man.
And last and certainly not least, Mr. George C. Tucker. What is your middle name?
Jay.
George J. Tucker. He is the engineering coordinator for World Stage. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. And Chris, in my eyes, you'll always be the.
Oh. That is so
not, wow. No.
It's already too sugary. We got a whole boatload of acquisitions to talk about. CES is in a couple days. We're gonna wrap about that. And according to Gizmodo, the TV revolution is being led by Intel, which concerns the heck out of me, considering they're the geniuses who gave us the HDMI connector. But hey, you know, it's a fabulous connector. It works all the time, and it you can captive it too, can't you? At least that's the rumor. Anyhow, sorry, I have issues with the HDMI connector. The first one, though, is we're going to kind of roll down the acquisitions from 2012 and then kind of work our way into two or three acquisitions that have been come down the last couple of weeks. I think the most notable one was Leviton buying HAI, I guess is the way you do it. And also the fact that Savant buying Light Touch, which was a huge step for Savant, because that it gave them, not be simple about this, but it gave them a home automation company integration with lighting. George, what was some of the maybe one or two more significant acquisitions or mergers from last year?
You know, I think the Savant one was really, really big. I mean, they needed that and to move forward at all, I think, into any part of the market. You know, the rest seemed like they were the one that did surprise me, though, actually, is the Colorado VNet one. You know, that's been up, that's been down, that's been up, that's been down. I don't know if it's a zombie that just won't go away or if there's really something there anymore. Seriously, I mean, I would see why you would want to buy it. But I don't know. I mean, that one mystified me. It's like, where is this thing going? Because it just never seems to go away. And not that I wanted to, but those were the ones that impressed me the most.
It is the perpetual, undyeable product. Mr. Netto, what is one or two products or mergers or acquisitions that were significant to you or maybe surprised you?
The one that got me was the Barco projection design one.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're both big-name players in the projection market. One was stronger in projection. The other one stronger in the LED display, I guess, for signage and I guess big display, I guess, would be Barco's strength. They have a nice new product, which is that ClickShare thing. And seeing those two come together was pretty interesting because, you know, projection design does a lot of OE for other people. And, you know, Barco's been having some issues with their projection. But if, you know, come some... have made progress, I guess, would be the word. I found it interesting. I, you know, they're both big name players in the industry.
Well, the other thing about that one is the fact that, first of all, both of them are high end display companies, right? You're not going to find a $600 projector from Projection Design. You're just not. No. The second thing, though, is do you think maybe this was Barco's move into that OEM market, or was it more to shore up some of their display stuff?
I think it's to shore up the display stuff. If you look at what projection design specialty is, it's all about the simulator market. You know, they are the high res, high pixel count, you know, projectors. And not that Barco couldn't do it or wasn't trying to do that before, but I think they took, you know, a working formula that PD has and is making it work.
Oh, very good. Todd, was there one or two acquisitions? I mean, you're the owner and CEO of Sound Source Home Theater, so you know the Savant Light Touch one would make sense for you for kind of your wheelhouse. But there was maybe one or two other ones that kind of shocked you or were significant from last year.
Well, George, I agree with you and Tim on the Savant, especially becoming a dealer of Savant and working with them. We wanted to go with a full automation. The lighting control was definitely something they needed, and it would bring them more as a competitor to that no-name company we don't want to name that they're going back and forth with all the time. But what shocked me the most was Nuvo Technology and Legrand. I worked with Nuvo for a long period of time, hand-in-hand with them, and I was a little bit in shock once they were releasing the wireless technology that they were being sold out and kind of working with Legrand. It was like, wow. I couldn't understand what was going on, what happened, but I could tell that they're keeping with the same great customer service. It's easy to communicate with them, their products. If there's an issue with their products, they don't ask you a question. They ship it overnight, and you get it the next day free of charge. So for me, I'm just glad that they're keeping with the same customer service, and they're working the same way as they've done before in the past.
Yeah. Another one that kind of came down this past, well, about 2 weeks ago, was the fact that Harman acquired Martin. And this shocked me a little bit. And George, we're going to start with you because World Stage does a lot of staging and stuff. And I don't. Okay, I'm going to admit this. I'm very naive when it comes to lighting, especially for stage lighting and stuff. I mean, I get some of the other stuff, but I don't get this one at all. Do you? I mean, am I missing something here? Because that.
Well,
I mean, the sound and lights. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. You know, in the AV install world, I can see it. In the event staging world, you're looking to have as broad a presence as possible. I mean, that's the same thing, I guess, in the custom install world. But the lighting is an essential part of staging an event. And if you have a reputable, well-established name that you can acquire to then fill in part of your, you know, sales projections with, that's a good thing. I don't know what this is going to shake out to yet, and I haven't really had time to really look at all of their stuff and how they're going to, you know, plan to keep the merger going. But Martin is a real staging company, and the other guys, you know, they've done audio, but these guys really work in the world of live. Yes, so the short, I'm curious how they're going to mesh, but I think it's probably a very good idea to keep a broad base and diversify.
Chris, does George have something here? Are they just trying to position themselves more as a complete staging company by getting a hold of Martin?
Probably. You know, diversification in general it seems to be the buzz within the whole industry. You can't just do one thing anymore. That's just my opinion.
Well, because somebody comes along who does a prosumer version and can undermine you with, you know, it's like the flat panel days. No, hey, I'm making a little money. This is guaranteed. Uh-oh, I don't have that anymore.
Yeah,
and to that, Todd, another one of the acquisitions we're going to talk about is the fact that Microsoft picked up ID8 Group R2 Studios, which follow me here, if you will. So the guy that started Slingbox, right, Blake Krikorian, he also started. First of all, he was the first guy to make an app, Android app for Crestron, but he also had this group, which was a home automation. And now Microsoft has it. So is that significant when it comes to, you know, I mean, good Lord, it's Microsoft. So I'm not trying to say that they're trying to diversify. If they diversified anymore, I'm not sure what. But, you know, is that a smart move from Microsoft's point? Because they haven't ever really been successful when it comes to home automation.
I think at this point they're reaching. But it's something that we're going to have to see what happens with this. Personally, they're looking to go with the more of the do-it-yourself atmosphere and kind of work with the consumer and see what they could do with it. And if they're going to go with that approach, they're not going to make it. But working with the company that they've been working with who made the Android app for Crestron, it is a great app. I have used it. It works well. And we just got to see how this plays out. At this point, I'm not confident and I'm not going to be going for them right away, because we know that based on their past history, they didn't do that well.
Microsoft, go ahead, George.
Xbox does have a great potential to be that Trojan horse that's already there to establish not only streaming media, but the home automation stuff. I mean, look at what Verizon's been trying to do it. There's a couple of phone companies in the Midwest that have been trying to sell home automation, mostly environmental controls, right? Lighting and mm-hmm. temperature stuff. They have a great potential with this Xbox Kinect or other variations of that to be able to, and I know I've always said I'm not a gesture, but to use those things to control certain room environments. And I don't think they're specifically going after R2's stuff for that reason. I think they want him more for the comprehensive interaction that he can provide Xbox games. But there's a huge potential there. And despite their problems in the past, I think they've now looked at the industry. And you'll remember, and if anyone has seen the press releases in the last couple of years, who is the main control system inside of Microsoft's Redmond offices? Do you know?
Isn't it Crestron?
It is Crestron.
Yes.
Top to bottom. So I wonder if, one, they've been looking in that and thinking, okay, we now know how it works, or if they're really just looking to get that sort of lower-end universal remote control market kind of thing, mass market across the globe. I don't think they're ever going to give it up, and I think they'll have the opportunity. But my opinion is until I see it in the Redmond offices actually working as their main stuff, I'm going to pretty much dismiss it until then.
Well, don't you see the Xbox as like the Apple TV on steroids? Picture it this way. You buy this Apple TV. It's $99 or whatever. You throw it into your system. It gets all the same things that Xbox does, but Xbox is more robust. It does the games. It does other things that obviously Apple TV cannot. It's already in the homes. You know, once now you bring in the Kinect, and you know that they want to somehow interact that Surface tablets into their Xboxes somehow. You know their minds are thinking that way. You know, there is a potential there, like the iPad AirPlay, you know, coexistence in a media center. You know, now you can bring their highly touted Surface that they've been trying to put out there, integrated more in part of the house. It's just bringing everything together, and you have a lot more horsepower with an Xbox than Apple does inside their Apple TV. That's just my
idea. I agree. There's a lot of potential there, but you know, look, we and Netflix have a great relationship, but how Netflix is still struggling. They have this built-in user base, and they're mm-hmm. still struggling. Again, Microsoft has much more power behind it, but they also had far more, less than brilliant management of those ideas and products.
Yep.
You're right. I agree. There's a Trojan horse there where they can say, no, surprise.
Well, the one thing the Xbox does have, George, and you're right, the Wii did have, I think the only thing the original Wii had was Netflix. But they have made themselves available to everybody, whether that's Apple TV or Xbox or the Roku or everything else like that. So, but you in the one thing the Xbox has over everybody else, I think, except for Roku, is their ubiquitousness. You can get Amazon streaming, you can get Netflix, you can get all these other services in addition to buying it from them. And so that's the quote unquote Apple, the iTunes store experience. You can still buy it from the box itself in addition to streaming all these other third party connections, I guess. But I would agree with you. It's got a much faster processor, obviously, because it's a gaming machine. You know, but then you start throwing all these other things in, and especially the more things get on the network. Let's talk about the Nest for a second, right? The Nest is a wireless thermostat. Well, if they start making it, and I'm not sure if they do have an API for it, but if they start making it available to other parties or third-party apps, well, then you have a situation where you don't want your Xbox, because it's on the network, can control your Nest. And then what happens, you know, your TV's on the network, obviously, because most modern TVs are going to be on the network, or your receiver is going to be on the network. All these other things are going to be, quote unquote, on your network. They're going to have an IP address. And so that's how your little Trojan horse scenario, George, will probably work, is the fact that all these things are going to have an IP address, including your Xbox. And then suddenly they're going to throw one more little thing at the top menu that says, you know, home control or home or you know, automation or something like that. Go ahead.
I also remember reading an article not too long ago where they have now, that's not an article, it's a press release from them, where they are now making Xbox more affordable for people by doing the rental, leasing, payment plan thing. It's almost like a service where you get the Xbox for cheap, but you just pay like a monthly bill for it. So they're going after something. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a conspiracy theorist guy here.
I think the only thing they're going after is trying to get that Apple market share. You know, Apple has basically made a name for itself. Everything they put out, they do their research. They just don't rush and put things out just to get it out and see what people think, and then it fails. They put out quality products that work every time. If that's what they're trying to do, Microsoft, when basically going into their stores, if you look at what they're trying to do, the new visual standpoints, what they're doing, their customer service, they're doing a great job, and they're trying to really take over that market share with Apple. But this could be a new way to make that happen. When I went into their stores, they talked about what was selling for the holiday season and what they had going for themselves. The Windows 8 wasn't really selling that much. They were, you know, the tablets were doing well, but not great, but it was Xbox. That's what they were striving on their business. That's what was selling, that and the Kinects with the new packaging and lower pricing. But again, what's happening in 2013? What's going to be being released? It's rumored to be released, a new Xbox 720. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what the power is going to be behind that.
Buy Microsoft stock. All right. Actually, don't, because it doesn't go anywhere. So, but no, you guys make a good point. The one thing I would say about that is if they do what they've done in the past when it comes to Apple versus Microsoft, is they'll just sit back, see what works, and then, you know, do it cheaper or something, you know, eat their lunch like they did in the 80s. From Engadget, LG's 2013 AV lineup has NFC in their Blu-ray, and I'll start with Todd on this, and also the possibility of a 9.1 surround sound system, and that just makes my head hurt. Todd, first of all, what the heck is NFC doing in a Blu-ray player?
To be honest with you, I don't know too much information about the NFC, especially in the residential market. I was hoping one of you guys could talk a little bit more about that with me. It seems to be a wireless device that it works as a mirroring, kind of, I guess I'm assuming, like they're going to try it as an Apple TV kind of thing, where it goes from your smartphone to your TV and back and forth with communication. I can't say anything more than that. As for their new home theater system, the 9.1, anything with LG is going to turn my customers off, because we don't work with the home theater in the boxes. If we were dealing with Best Buy clients or dealing with more, you know, how can I say it, more of the middle market clients, then that would be more effective for us, and we would kind of want to work with that. But if we're going to sell a system, we're going to kind of work through it and sell it by piece and kind of offer to the customer on that basis, not everything in one shot, put it in a 9.1 system in a room, give the customer more speakers that might not benefit their room. You know, it's something that I would turn away from at this point, especially dealing with LG products. It's something that I haven't dealt with before, including the TVs and down. We're more of a Samsung guy, and with everything else, we're going to offer separate components to go with that and a different speaker solution versus going with their whole all-in-one solution.
Let me ask you a question real quick, because you're much more knowledgeable on this than I am. Is there a situation where, how do I put this, where you can have too many speakers, I guess is the best way to put this? Is it a space issue? Is it the fact that you have, you know, you have X amount of, you know, your room is this big, and so, you know what, you can't use 9 speakers. You're not going to hear it. You're not going to enjoy it. So if your room is X big, then it requires fewer speakers. Or is it always bigger is better and more is better?
See, I wouldn't go that way. More is better. It's based on the customer's lifestyle. It's based on the customer's room size. A lot of the time when you're dealing with my kind of clients, they want aesthetics. They want it to look right. If there's speakers everywhere in the living room where they're entertaining, or the family room, whatever room it might be, it's something that they're not going to want to see. Guys will want more. Guys want bigger. Guys want better. Guys want to impress. When you put a woman into the equation and you're talking about the design aspect, if there's 9 speakers in a room, they're going to lose it. You're not going to sell them that way. Sure, there's ways of hiding it. There's speakers that could hide it, that you could just look like the wall. There's speakers that are in wall and ceiling. But imagine pitching your ceiling with 9 different speakers and a subwoofer. It might not work out. It's something that I would only suggest if the customer is really into it, or if they were going to more of a dedicated movie room, a home theater room or something in that matter. Being a New York installer, really there's not that much space in a lot of people's rooms. We're talking about a very small rooms, and I don't think it would benefit them you know, it might be too much clutter of music and it might sound overpowering. I want more cleanliness. I'd rather have less will do me more. But in a movie room atmosphere, that's a different experience for the client. That's something that I might consider doing that. But again, room size versus the customer's aesthetics. You know, you never want to take away the aesthetics away from the customer's room just to give you yourself a selfish more revenue or to do something just to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I always wondered for the everyone listening even, but you guys, you know, there's a certain number of speakers you want to get that surround sound, but how granular do you have to get? I mean, maybe for the a very special event or a very special kind of theater, but a lot of this stuff can be done psychoacoustically now, and I'm sure I'll get people writing in just about the frequency sampling rates, the 96 kilohertz versus 44.1 and all that other stuff, but in comparison, but is it really that necessary? That really does the question that really I've had is, do you have to be physically that granular to get a full surround sound, and do you need to be that precise?
Not even your movie theaters are going to give you that great a sound anymore. I mean, no. If you're going into any theater you're going to go into is probably just still operating on some old hokey system. To be honest with you, it's not going to be anything upgraded. And if you are going to the upgraded sound systems, good luck. You're not going to get that at home. I mean, well, maybe Todd can enlighten us on what a big budget sound system sounds like in a comp. You know, but for me, you know, I got 5.1. That's what broadcasts at is 5.1. And I can go as far as maybe 6 or 7.1 on my other tuner, which is not even completely hooked up. So you're right. The granular effect. I love watching a movie like A Private Ryan and hearing things buzzing from left to right. But I cannot pinpoint that it's on the back right channel. Bullet just dropped. You know, I'm not that good.
Well, maybe it sounds a lot like some of these, like the 4K stuff that we talk about in other shows that, you know, the simulation market for that kind of stuff is where it's at. When I'm in training or I'm doing something very precise that needs to be represented, that kind of oral and visual information would be very important. But in general, you psychoacoustic it, you mix it in a certain way, and people are going to hear it from where you thought you would put a speaker anyway.
Yeah. Right. Go ahead, Todd.
Here's the question that I have is, what does everybody here on this call have in their home? I just bought a new home and I put 5 speakers in the subwoofer in my home. I didn't go to 6. I could have went to 7. I chose 5 because that's what I feel most comfortable with. I think it does the job and it does it right. I couldn't have more than that.
5.1 here. And I told you, I have another one that has, I think I could do 6.1 or 7.1 in my other, left my other tuner. And I don't think I have, I think it's maybe 2.1 at that, because I haven't been able to find a neat way to run the wires. But that's just me because I'm lazy.
Well, and I've got the 5.1 because back to Chris's point, that's what they broadcast in. And that's what I watch most of the time is some sort of, you know, cable or satellite programming, whether that's football or some other programming. And that's what they broadcast in. And so since that's the case, that's, you know, I can't make it better, I guess, than what they're shooting in or what they're broadcasting in.
And to George's point, Bose makes a living off of, you know, the small system that makes it sound like a big room system. Yeah. You know, that's the way they've been advertising their products with their 3.1 or 2.1, whatever product. It does the job, but it's not going to be for, you know, the guy who is putting the home theater in the system, and he's just not going to do that. He's going to want to put the bigger, better, you know, sound.
Yeah, and it's funny because 5.1, but it's almost always switched over to 2-channel because I'm a big 2-channel lo-fi head, so I'm listening to music. Even my DTS, you know, surround sound disc, I'm like, you know, it's 2-channel. That's why we listen to it.
Yep.
That's how I listen to my music. So I don't simulate my music to an all-channel stereo. Put in the 2 front speakers, and that's how I do it.
All right. You are listening to AV Week with Todd Puma from the Source Home Theater, Mr. Chris Netto from AV Help Desk, and George Tucker from World Stage. This one comes to us from Gizmodo. According to them, both Google and Microsoft failed. It's time for Intel. And what we're talking about, oddly enough, because we just talked about how Microsoft's doing it right, is the fact that Intel is coming into your living room, which just makes me happy to no end again, because they gave us the HDMI connector. here's what they're talking about, though, is they're talking about a number of different products that they're going to come out with, apparently, in CES next week. George, is this a natural evolution of Intel? They're a computer company, let's not forget, or first of all, they're a chip company. Or is it them trying to diversify, go back to our first couple stories, into a market where they think that they have some space to expand in?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that it's probably not so much diversification, easy for me to say, as it is wanting the stockholders wanting to see more profit capability. Chips are chips. They're doing well. They've pretty much got it locked up. And you've got your doubling of speed every so often or more functions per. But in general, where are you going? You know, you can only have so many devices. You can only put it in so many things. And while it's a lot of stuff, I think we're looking at someone saying, hey, we need to start making products. And it's a dangerous game. Google's tried it and they've had some fun. You know, Microsoft's only really succeeded in Xbox. And we can go on and on. But I think that's really where it's coming from is, hey, we can do this. Everybody else is doing it. All right, we'll spend 2% of our R&D on this and see what happens with it. And the investors will get all excited and we can keep our stock profits up.
Chris, do you think this new little set-top box is, like George said, you know, trying to keep the investors happy, spend a little money doing some R&D? Or is it just another development for Intel?
A little bit of both. I think they've already made a play at this with their WiDi capability, which will compete against like an Apple TV with wireless transmission. So I think this is just another step closer, providing a box that somebody else is going to take and incorporate into their TVs at some point.
Todd, is this something you would feel comfortable? I mean, obviously, the story is very sparse on details, so I'm not asking you to spec it today. But the idea, is it something you would feel comfortable with? Maybe not first generation, but second, third generation from Intel?
Yes, I like the idea with going with it with the smart DVR. You know, and basically you don't have to find the program that's recorded. It records everything up to 30 days. The only thing that I have with a little bit of notes that I had with the face recognition, that's something that I wouldn't feel comfortable with they're trying to get based on the consumer getting certain ads out and so on and so forth. But I'll give it a shot once it comes out. But like you said, it would have to be a couple of generations down, maybe the third generation, the fourth generation, so we're not being the beta testers of the community.
No. And the one thing about the 30-day recording I think is cool. There's a guy over in there's a company over in England in the UK who did an experiment, I think last summer or summer before last, where they recorded every single channel from not just the BBC, but from every other thing, every other channel available in the UK, and made it available as part of some experiment. And it actually didn't take, I mean, it's obviously terabytes worth of information, but in relative speaking, it didn't take that much hard drive space. So,
you know, Tim, I wanted Todd started off asking Todd about NMC.
Yes.
And while we've been sitting here talking, I've been having some thoughts on it, if you would spare me a
sure.
moment. Why would you want to do it? Well, NFC is what? It's a close proximity transmission scheme, sort of like Bluetooth or the rest, right?
Near field communication is technically
near
what
near field communications, right? So a lot of people love it because it was going to be used for, say, cash or credit cards built into your phone. You just say, okay, I put it over hover it over the strip. It automatically gets my information. I pay for it. All I have to carry is my little smart device. But a lot of these all-in-one systems or any system that wants to stream, the one big problem, of course, is that beloved HDMI cable or any cables at all. And you want to go wireless. Well, what's wireless's biggest enemy? Interference. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. If you can make it so you're using a system like near-field communications and it is only within a certain range and a certain frequency and a certain encryption type, you can really make your signal reliable. And then your customers go say, this is great. I buy a box. There's no wires. I just hit a button and they're all talking to each other. That's where I think the potential for something like this LG product could be pretty big in the mass market side at least. And you would probably see it transition very quickly over to the high-end market for at least maybe the cell phone or smart device being a controller without having to do any special stuff except have your control surface. And it just goes, click, I'm connected. I've noticed you. And it won't do it to anybody else's. You can have you know, the kids' room upstairs that has a similar system won't get interfered with. That's where I think I see it working fairly well. I don't think it'll support any kind of HD format bandwidth and video, but it will is probably pretty darn good for compressed audio.
Well, and to Todd's point earlier point about, you know, when you get those of the fairer gender involved, they don't want to see cables, they don't want to see speakers, they don't want to see anything. And so, yes, if you can make it to where they don't see any of that, well, then yeah, it's all better.
So. Near field has an appeal in the corporate world as well, especially if you're talking about presentation capabilities. So if you now have found a way to present material onto a projector wirelessly where you're not having to jump on a corporate network, which has a lot of restrictions, you know, from any device, anybody can send a, you know, a cell phone or a tablet wirelessly without the restriction of it has to be on the network, like similar to like an AirPlay, for example, where, you know, your iPad has to be on the same network as your Apple TV device in order for it to work. At home, it works well. When we get this requests in the office, you know, it's like, okay, it has to be a corporate iPad, you know, because it has to be approved on the network in order for this to work. And then it has to be that same iPad using that same Apple TV. The moons have to align for this to work in the corporate world. If near field technology can come in and completely be, you know, secure one-off connection that is not going to sit and remain open and susceptible to intrusion, that may be a possibility as well.
And that would be an excellent possibility. So,
yep.
All right. Real quickly, guys, the commercial integrator did a survey of their peeps, of their people. Of integrators, and asked what the top three manufacturers were in 34 product categories. And we're going to go through each and every one and ask you guys your opinions.
There will be a test.
There will be a test. I'm joking. There was a couple surprises for me, and I'm not, you know, one of the surprises was the fact that Cisco was, holy cow, way out front in networking. And then Extron and Crestron were number 2 and 3, which kind of really surprised me. I'm not sure why that was. It's like, okay, sure. But Todd, we'll kick it off with you. What is your number one, number two display and then control company? Like, who do you go to when it comes to stuff like that? Like, if you're walking into somebody's house and they're just asking you to spitball, This is my one or two companies that I go to.
For displays, we would always go with Samsung every single time. Especially in the residential market, they work well. For control companies, it's going to be Crestron because it works well, and there's all different price points that are going to appease and appeal to any kind of customer. If it's a customer who's looking on doing one or two rooms, to a customer who's looking on doing 32 zones.
Chris, is there one or two guys that you talk about when it comes to control and when it comes to video and maybe even, do you guys do any video conferencing?
Yeah, we do some.
Okay. I won't ask about that one.
No, I mean, we do some video, obviously we do a lot of video conferencing. I was joking, but video conferencing, you know, there's pretty much two, three, maybe big players in the industry, and everybody falls back to it. I mean, the market share goes to Polycom and to Cisco, formerly known as Tamberg. You know, those are the two main things that we can go in and we can spec in whatever the customer is looking for. I mean, life size is there. Are they gaining a market share? Possibly. But the big companies are going to go to the name brands. Especially, you know, when you're walking into an existing situation where IT guys are speccing in, you know, this is our network and we already have the Polycom approved, or we already have Cisco there. It used to be the video conferencing company used to come in and pitch it, but now it's coming from the IT side. So you have IT guys that are saying, hey, listen, we got Cisco products in the rack. We'd like to keep it all Cisco. Can we use the Cisco product or the Tamberg product? And just keep everything Cisco, one name, one brand, all eggs in one basket. Polycom partners up with Microsoft a lot, so you get that relationship there. And now you're starting to see the Lucent relationship with the RadVision product that they acquired.
Oh, yeah.
Which is another acquisition that we didn't talk about, which I think is pretty significant as well, was via the RadVision VTC. Or RadVision in itself, because I think that just adds now a third player into the into that mix. So those would be on the video conferencing side. On the Crestron control side, there's Crestron, Extron, AMX, Big 3. No real favorites. I mean, we do a lot of Crestron, a lot of Extron, not so much on the AMX stuff, but it depends on what the customer is looking to do.
So it just depends on, it's more of a, you know, what's the use case and what's the end product supposed to be?
Yeah. Yeah, where we will get more specific is on, obviously, if we're looking to build the system out from small to big, you know, we will sit with the customer and say, these are our recommendations and work that out. From a display side, same thing. You know, you can't just say anymore, you know, here's your standard projector, you're going to use this projector and that. There's 50 different projector manufacturers that are working in the commercial end. There's displays, and then there's the battle of what size display do we go before we cut off projectors and go strictly display, you know? And I mean, it all comes down to the design of the room, but have those questions.
Isn't some of that also use case as well? Because if you're going to be shooting but displaying primarily video, you can easily justify a display, let's say. But if you're doing friggin', you know, Excel spreadsheets every single meeting, there's, unless you're up in the 80 and 90 inch range of displays, I'm sorry, but there's not a projector out there that couldn't kick the tail out of a 40 or 50 inch display when it comes to stuff like that has to be that, you know, granular and that technical.
I'll put my other hat on, which is the other hat of the on-site guy. I would rather maintain a monitor than a projector and the bulb life and all that, because no matter what we do, the customers will bypass, you know, whatever we're doing. They'll jump on tables, turn on the projectors, turn them off incorrectly, unplug them. You know, next thing you know, they're cutting hours and hours off the bulb life because it's not being run correctly. And we can put all the management software we want running it, but if they're determined to shut that fan off because it's making too much noise, or, you know, and it can be the quietest projector out there, they'll do it.
Yeah, but those bulbs aren't that expensive, Chris.
Couple $100.
Depends on which one.
It depends on what company and what your budget is.
I just bought one for a block of Sanyos, and they were about $350 a pop. So,
hey, yeah. I'm the first one to tell you. I wish LED technology was there that, you know, will give us a 5K projector. That would solve so many problems. What? You know, at least a 5,000 lumen projector, not 3,500 what is out there now. I want something brighter.
And a true 5,000 lumen, not just, you know, this is 5,000 lumen equivalent because you can't really test it because it's not really, you know, whatever.
Yeah, not 5,000 lumens on paper. I want to see 5,000 lumens.
George, I'm not sure where to go with you because of your expertise, but let's just start with this. When it comes to, you know, speakers and control systems and displays, I can go anywhere with you on this. Let's just start with sound systems. What's like one or two guys that you like, this is your go-to when it comes to sound?
You mean in the staging world, or in keeping it to
both
the integration? In the staging world, we're Yamaha. If you're going to do something in that world, we're a big Yamaha house. We really rely on those pieces of gear to a great degree. But I have to say that one of the things I am looking at this, I'm really impressed by how deep Cisco has ingrained itself into the conferencing, even though they did have acquisition, but by name, there's people are saying Cisco as well as the IP devices. I mean, we're not talking about routers and switches. They're talking about actual Cisco product, you know, things.
Yeah.
They've made a huge jump. Just by name recognition alone, that's something very serious that all these manufacturers have to look at. And, you know, we talked about the Trojan horse a while ago. And who was it that you thought Cisco was going to buy?
Control 4.
You know, it might be plausible, but they are making big strides into that.
They still might.
They still might. For home stuff, you know, I stand by some of the standard stuff. I mean, I dream of having one of those Crestron surround sound Macintosh, I guess, inspired amps. They look like that to me.
Yeah. When it comes to video, then displays, projectors. I mean, is there one or two guys that you would let's talk about projectors? Is there one or two guys that you would recommend with regardless?
Well, Barco and Christie's, it pretty much. They have some products that, at least for our staging world, that work very well. I mean, we use almost everybody, but that seems to be the stuff that I am dealing with the most, and they're tough. They're reliable. We have stuff on road shows that are 10, 11 years old, and they may not be putting out 5,000 lumens anymore or 10,000 lumens anymore, but they're still there and doing it.
Right. Mine is, and this is just my own personal, I like AMX's control stuff a lot. My own personal experiences, though, is a Crestron, is as a Crestron house, and that's kind of where we are. I agree with Todd when it comes to displays. I would throw a Samsung in regardless of thinking about it, you know, regardless of where I'm going. And then obviously you delineate from there and you think about it a little bit harder.
I have a question, though. I mean, there's a lot of Extron, a lot of Crestron. Okay, they've only given the top three
and
most of these topics. But I am shocked not to see Control 4 anywhere on this. I miss it.
I'm not either, because the thing. You're talking about integrators, right? And you've got, and let's run down this, but they talk about, on the control and automation segment of this article, talks about HVAC controls, large-scale control systems, lighting control, which did surprise me, and I'll get to that in a second, remote controls, and touchscreens. All right? Without exception, those five categories, Crestron was number one. Even over Lutron in lighting, which surprised the heck out of me.
That's definitely surprising.
Yeah. But you're, go ahead.
It's commercial integrator.
Yeah.
You're going to have the guy, the way they answer the question, or the responders for these questions are going to come from the, if I had my pick, it would be this, because the commercial integrator works more with Crestron than they do with Lutron.
And that was the nature of my question, Chris. Is it really that they had their druthers, that's what they'd want, or is it because it's the name they know? And I'm not taking anything away from any of these companies, but I just, these kind of, you know, polls always make me wonder. Is it just the first thing I thought of, and the guy that I most use, because then I know I can rely on them? You know, it's sort of like saying, you know, my grass is green, but I live, you know, next to a desert, and no one else is next to me. Or is it real? I kind of very suspicious.
Well, 90% of the times on a commercial job, you walk in and it's a Lutron lighting system, and you have to interface to it. You know, if you sit down and talk to a company like Crestron, for example, and Extron, or even AMX, who are looking for this automated building control, the right way to do it would be for everybody to go out there and do the entire building AMX, the entire building Crestron, or Extron for that matter, you know, and then everything is on one system, on one. We've had these talks before, you know, that's the way everything will work, right? Not just interfacing and making things happen.
But Chris, here's the thing, and the reality of the world that we live in, one of the things that came out of Infocom 100 was the whole smart building thing, and it's something that AMX and Crestron have been talking about for a while. I love the idea. I love the whole, you know, everything integrated type scenario. But the reality of the world that we live in is those guys aren't going to get that, right?
No.
They're not going to get everything. So they're going to have to live with and work with what they get. And a lot of times, you're right, it's going to be Lutron. It's going to be talking to a Cisco, this, that, and the other. They have to be able to make themselves available and, you know, willing to work with other people and do so nicely.
Well, that's what a lot of them don't do.
Well, that's my problem. All right, last one here, guys. CES is next week. We're taping this on the 4th. What is, Todd, we'll kick this off with you. What's one or two things that you're expecting to come out of, or maybe even more surprising, not to come out of the Consumer Electronics Show next week?
Basically, what I think is going to be the hot market is going with the 4K. We're going to see more releases from like Samsung, LG, and the other manufacturers for TVs. It's really going to be focused on that. They're probably going to focus on more of the design aspect, making it a more cleaner television, less of a bezel like they did last year, but kind of evaporating that a little more. I'm assuming that it's going to be a lot about the aesthetics of the TVs going this year to please more of the homeowner, because most of these people out today already have TVs, and you can't get a person to buy a TV just because you have a smart TV feature in it, because you have 3D. It's got to be something more of a wow, something that's really going to change their minds on why they would want to buy a new TV if they had a TV for 3 years. So I'm assuming Samsung and those manufacturers like Samsung have came out with something or coming out with something that's going to wow the community and the industry to go out and want to buy another television. I heard some rumors that Samsung was planning on making a television like ultra flat. That was going to be more of like a little bit thicker than a piece of cardboard it could bend. Yeah, that's bendable material. I read it. They were trying it with a cell phone. I think, Chris, you were there with me, and you kind of educated me a little bit more about what they were doing. It's very interesting, but they are looking on making a television out of it. And I don't know if that's going to be released this year. I'm assuming they're going to talk about it a little bit.
That's awesome. Mr. Nutto, what is one or two things that you are looking for when it comes to CES next week?
Looking forward, I am not going to be there. So
I'm not going to be there either, but good Lord, everybody else and their brother will be.
I will bet the house that there is more headphones coming out.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
How many?
And they'll be, and they'll be by Dre.
Yes, more.
Oh, God, no.
How many Beats does he have?
He's got a lot of Beats going on. This is like, they're coming out like bunnies. Everybody's popping out these headphones everywhere. And at companies that never got into the headphone business, slapping their name on it, they better watch out what they, you know, that they're not killing their name by putting out a lesser quality product. But God, it's remarkable how much interest there is in headphones. I mean, I can't find a freaking pair that I like. So, you know, but before there was like five or six different pair of headphones to choose from. Nowadays, you go through a list, and it's not just sound quality. It's now the look, it's the features, it's the add-ons, it's the wire, that how bendable it is. And I've been through four sets myself just trying to find the right one.
It's a trend now. The kids are wearing it. You know, I've seen going in the subway, kids having the Dre Beats on and all the Monster products that they had just for a fashionable style. And I would say, look at them and be like, wait, there's a wire hanging out. What are you listening to this with? They're like, oh, we're not listening to this with anything. It's just the style now. You wear it around your neck. You kind of do what you do. It's like wearing a hat backwards, or, you know, back in the day when they were wearing the pants backwards, like crisscross. You know? It's like, what are these pants?
Yeah, Tim was...
It was hard. It was hard to use the restroom doing that. So, Mr. Tucker, you have the last word on this. What are you looking forward to come out of CES?
Well, my favorite headphones still have always been the Sony MDR V6s, or the line. I have two pairs now. One's 10.5 years old and sound almost as good as the day I bought them, and a new pair that I just love to death. So they may not be audiophile centric. Yeah, they got a bump, but then again, I still have NSN Tems in my home. So. That being said, I was really intrigued by a couple of things. Most of you guys talked about it, the flexible screen stuff. Hey, I said twice now, OLED and the flexible stuff is in two yearly shows going to be the next big thing. So there you go. But there's some flexible phones supposedly being shown by either 3M or LG and those guys. I'm really curious to see that. That would be cool. But what I'm really interested in is the WeGig, I forget how you want to say that. That's the 60 gigahertz. You know, as we spoke about earlier, you know, RF is just saturated, and everything from, you know, 802.11, this, that, and the other thing. Even 802.11ac, while a nice product, is really saturated. I want to see a new option. You know, beyond getting the white spaces into the commercial market and really rolling, this sounds to me like something really cool.
Yeah, and that to that point, George, that would scare me if we started getting white spaces into the residentials. So, what I'm looking forward, it's not. And Cisco's going to buy Control 4. So, I'm with Todd, and the one piece that kind of grabbed me was from the Home Technology Tell website, and that it was the bendable, possible, you know, not completely fold it in half and put in your pocket, but still, the flexible displays is something that will be really, really be kind of cool and neat to see what comes out of CES next week. So
yeah, now the consumer can mount the TV and it can bounce off the floor if it falls off the wall.
That would be awesome.
There you go.
Now all we need is a display you can paint on the wall, and then we'll be done.
Wallpaper TVs.
Wallpaper TVs.
Up next.
You heard it here first.
Well, gentlemen, that's all we've got for today. Mr. Todd Puma is the CEO of Source Home Theater. Thank you so much for joining us, sir.
Thank you for having me. It was a great time.
Mr. Chris Nutto, he is a consultant. Your boss is going to shoot me. A consultant with AV Help Desk. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Last but not least, thank you, Mr. George Tucker. He is the coordinator from World Stage.
Thank you, guys. Great show.
Guys, thanks so much for listening. Check us out on the website, avnation.tv. You can also check us out on Facebook, on Twitter, on Google+, LinkedIn, and other places as well. But go by the website. You'll find this podcast and others, avnation.tv. avnation.tv. That is all the time we have for AV Week.